Mr. Pullen, reel 23.
And all at once a signalman shouted out, "There she is, sir." And then she was so camouflaged, they didn't notice her, see? And of course it was that, and we went to her. And what I think about it, a German officer was on board, I don't know if it was the captain or no, but it appears, I think, he must have put something in each magazine, because she exploded in four parts, you see. And then down she went.
At what stage did you get aboard her with your boat?
Oh, after we bombarded her, you know. She was still smoking with the gunfire we'd hit her with, see? And she was still safe enough like then. But I got on board, I took my commander on board, see? And when I come down in the boat, a chap named Joplin, A.B., was laughing, you know. One of the German sailors said to him, "You'll be the next bastards to go under, like, see? Like that."
But you got aboard the Dresden before her magazines went up, did you?
Oh, yes, before that, see.
Yes.
After I left her, look, see, after we put that gunnery shield back, and I left her, not long after up she went. Well, then a pig was aboard her, and it swam to our ship. And it was only a small pig. They captured it from somewhere, see. And after we had this pig aboard, it grew up to be a good big-sized one. Ended up at the gunnery school. Sold for £2,000 for the Red Cross, you know.
Now, after the sinking of the Dresden, you had orders to go and search for another German ship.
Prince Alfred Frederick.
Which ship?
Prince Alfred Frederick.
Prince Elder Frederick.
She was an armed liner, German armed liner, see? But we didn't find her because she didn't turn in Newport News in America.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had to go for a refit at Simonstown.
Yes.
When you got there, what sort of shape was the Glasgow in? And what kind of things did you have to do for the refitting?
Well, according to the carpenter, he was in her when she was built. He said she wasn't a bit of good. You see, after a ship been bombarded, that it gets magnetism into them and hit out of them. Did you know?
Sorry, say that again.
He was telling me that when a ship is built, if you're hit like that, you know, gunfire and that, magnetism is into them and hit out of them, see? And she was any shape. She wouldn't be no good for war again. Because she wasn't either, because they laid her up after.
Mm.
But she was in a very bad shape, really, with the being knocked about. She had about 12 shot holes in her, right down the water line. There plates on there, look, see? Besides the funnels and different parts, it was shot away, look, on board. Our sorry part was, just as the battle started, a steam pipe on the upper deck. They hit a steam pipe, see, and that thing made all that noise. You couldn't get no orders through from the gunnery.
Just as what battle started?
Just as the action started with the...
With the Dresden?
With the Coronel battle first. The ordinary fit there. They didn't do much about it, you know. See. Mm-hmm. Put her in dry dock, scraped her bottom and painted it, done all this sort of thing, see. Got her ready back to sea. Of course, she survived for a good while after that, see.
Did you get shore leave at Simonstown?
Oh, yes. I used to go up to Cape Town quite a lot.
What was Simonstown like as a base for...?
A nice place, very nice it was. Quiet for us, you see. But then we used to all walk up to Cape Town. And we found very nice people there. I went in a cafe and sat down and ordered a meal. And when I asked for the bill, the man said, "No, you don't pay." And he got his daughter to get a taxi, and we went up around Table Mountain for a bit of a friendship, actually. Very good. They were very nice people all together there.
Were there any regular haunts for sailors, for British sailors, in Simonstown or Cape Town?
No. No, on the way to The only aunts we knew was Tin Town, where the Kaffirs used to put up, you know. And they tell me once, he said, Ted, you're walking that to Cape Town, he said, when you pass Musenberg, you're from the sea all the way up, see, nearly. And there was this Tin Town with all these Kaffirs lived in there. And they was telling me about, I'd have to be careful. I'm blown one night out, they all come, pulled me in there, and they had a tin in the center of their cabin place with candles. And their banjos and all that, tell me they were going, they're friendly, quite friendly. Had a good time there, you know, see. I thought they were going to murder me at first, you know, because there was Kaffirs and all the different nationalities there. Yes.
Now, I want to go on to when you joined the Ready.
Oh, the Ready, that was at Southampton.
Yes. Now, this was really your first experience of serving aboard a small ship.
Well, yes.
Yes. From your previous experience, which did you prefer, service aboard big ships or aboard small ships?
Oh, big ship. Every time, big ships. You had more recreation and more excitement on board. There was always something going on among the different men. It wasn't boxing, it was musical business and or gymnastics. They used to do all that work even in the evenings, you know, doing parallel bars and vaulting oars, anything just to pass the time away, I suppose, as well as their own tin pot way of getting along, writing letters and things like that, see?
Were there any other reasons, apart from the fact that there was more recreation, why you preferred big ships to small ones?
Well, I suppose in a way it was because more space and more excitement, that's all. I can't say there's anything. Of course, aboard these small ships, like destroyers, there was no life at all aboard a destroyer. If I was to tell you the truth, you can't stand up. When I was in there already, you couldn't stand up, you couldn't sit down, and you couldn't walk about. Now, I got in a tub, and I sat in a tub this side. And with that destroyer, he lurched, we went the tub. And we always had a rope round us, you know, see? Because if we fell overboard, and it was quite easy to fall overboard in the destroyer, because she shoots with what, doing 35 knots, you know? All them new destroyers were doing that, about 35. Over on our side like that. And the water used to come down just like a waterfall all the time. And you could never cook nothing. I used to boil a dozen eggs before we left Kappa. You have the canteen boat come alongside, see? Well, you buy what you wanted from the canteen boat. I got a dozen eggs and boiled them hard, put them in my lamy coat pocket, see? And as soon as we put to sea, perhaps I break an egg and eat it, see? That's the only way you lived an awful life. It's almost awkward to be able to tell anyone the life you can live there, see? You couldn't make a cup of tea because there's seas was continually washing over. I've seen our captain up there with his oil skins on, day and night, peering out all the time. A terrible life, really. I know the only way I could find any comfort, we had a collision mat in the forecastle part. I used to go down on my hands and knees and hang that collision mat there. Stop there for hours, hands and knees.
What was a collision mat?
Oh, in case of oil was hitting the ship, see, put the collision mat over there, see, to fill the oil up, stop the water, you know, see. Mm-hmm. Pretty big mats they were too.
Was there any way at all that you preferred the destroyers to the bigger ships?
None at all. I was glad when I had to come out of there. Of course, I had to come out because I got ruptured there, you see. Mm.
Some sailors I've spoken to said that they preferred the smaller ships because discipline was much less strict, was more relaxed, more informal. What do you think
of
that?
Well, it's all according, I suppose. Was they at war? Was in the Grand Fleet? That's the part, see? If it was in the Grand Fleet, the discipline was just as bad there. In fact, let me tell you something. We had what they call Rudolph gear. I think you expanding voice pipes, you know. That stretched all along the decks. We had one able seaman looking out for the torpedoes. And the captain called him up in the night, couldn't make him hear. He sent for me, said, go and find out if that man's asleep. I went along and he was asleep. His name was Moore. We used to call him Pony Moore. He was asleep, all right. So I broke this Rudolph gear, see? And I said to the captain, I said, hey, Rudolph gear was broke, that's why he couldn't hear you. He took me and this Ava Seaman on board the Sanders, our parent ship. He said, if I thought you were shooting that man, he said, I'd have you shot, both of you. Because he said he lost a destroyer in the Dardanelles, just like that. I saved that man's life. And he had no punishment for it. But they was doubtful about what I was saying, see?
Yeah. What's this got to do with life being... Oh, this is an example of how strict discipline could be on destroyers.
Yes, yeah.
Well, the people who have said they preferred the more informal life on a destroyer, we're talking about peacetime.
Peacetime, yes. Mm. That's a different proposition, see? Mm. Because half the time they're not at sea. They're always in the pens, you know, laid up, see? And they're going to... all about, they don't want to be dressed too well. Whereas aboard a proper battleship, you've got to be dressed all the time, you know. Mm. Your proper rig of the day in it. There's lots of little things like that that don't happen in a small ship as does happen in a big ship. In fact, I was in Spain when it had been boiling hot. And I've had a man down in my picket boat, cleaning the brass work and all that. He took his jumper off. And the lieutenant sent for me. Look at that man, he said, improperly dressed. He said, I'd take him to my safety before the commander. And all of that man to put his jumper on, you know. Hot day like that. And you don't leave your cap off or anything like that, see.
That's what, on the big ships?
That's on the big ships.
Yeah.
See, that's a discipline there. But on the destroyers, I know they sometimes lie about there. They don't bother, look, see. Because... Well, there ain't the amount of men or there ain't the amount of admirals hanging around to know about these people.
So there was something to be said for life on the smaller ships in peacetime?
Oh, yes, I suppose there was, you know, see. Not only that, but then they get sixpence a day more, look, see. Extra pay, what they call hard layers. So that was another point, look, see.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being in a submarine, you get half a crown day extra.
Yeah. Now, let's go back to the Reddy. When you joined her, you were attached to the Grand Fleet.
Yeah, that's right.
And you were where? Mainly in Scapa?
Scapa, all the time.
Yeah. Now, during that period you were with the Grand Fleet, what was the routine operations for the fleet and for your destroyers?
Out every day, across the Zeebrugge or... what's the other part? Ostend, them places, see. We used to get across to try and drag the German fleet out, see. Two of us, two destroyers at a time. And then that's all we were doing, cruising around there like that, see. And of course, on board, you didn't do so much extra work because it was too heavy, seas was too rough. You couldn't get on the upper deck to do anything. But when the time came, you just have to wash all over the upper deck, you know. When you come back in harbour and she was a bit quiet, we used to use the shell oil to wash the decks over it, polish them up, you know. And we had this coconut matting, stop you from slipping, see. And of course, we always had to keep our guns. Every destroyer had three guns, you know, see. 3 4-inch guns. We had to keep them in perfect condition.
Why did you use shell oil for cleaning the decks?
I don't know, I'm sure. They used to use it. I suppose it was cheaper in them days, you see.
It'd make it very slippery, wouldn't it?
Well, I suppose they could sweep the grease up and all that quicker, see?
Mm-hmm.
But